Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. Once again, this is our Deep Space Nine discussion panel, and we'll be discussing Season 4.5 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I am not alone. I have assembled our regular panel. First up is Mr. Curtis Holloway. How's it going, Curtis?
Awesome. Hello, everybody. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. Next up, we have Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Hey, good. Hello, everyone.
And last but not least, we have Richard Szabo. How's it going, Richard?
Fantastic. Good to be back. I'm ready to get into this.
All right. I apologize, listener, if the sound quality of me is at all askew. About, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes before recording, I broke my microphone. I knocked the table and it fell over, which it has done before, but this time it decided to actually break. So I am using my microphone on my headset. Hopefully it'll be good enough to get through tonight's recording, and then I've since ordered an actual nice microphone, so hopefully my sound quality will get better as we go forward. But just a recap from our last episode, we hit episode 4.0, so some of the highlights from that episode would have been Worf joining the cast of Deep Space Nine. And yeah, a lot of great episodes. The Visitor, Tony Todd, was amazing as an older Jake Sisko. And the last episode we left off on was Crossfire, where Odo's hidden feelings for Kira began to surface as she began to relate her relationship with First Minister Shakar. All right, so let's move on to episode 86 of the series, 14th of the season, and that's Return to Grace, Stardate 49534.2, directed by Jonathan West, story by Tom Benko, teleplay by Hans Beimler, original air date February 5th, 1996. Dukat seeks Kira's help in regaining his rank in the Cardassian Union. Damar is introduced. So yeah, this is the episode where we see Dukat and Damar basically serving on a Cardassian transport with Zial there, and then they, with Kira's help, they take on the Klingons, and Dukat captures a Klingon bird of prey and begins using it as, as a means to fight against the Klingons. And then Zial at the end of the episode goes with Kira back to Deep Space Nine. This was a fun episode. I like the bait and switch. I like the ruthlessness of Dukat. You know, how he just destroys his own transport ship with all the Klingons on it. That was pretty cool. Pretty badass. Of course, Damar being introduced. Damar will play a bigger role as the seasons progress. It's hard to believe in this episode he was just a bridge officer. Just another guest character, and who would have thought that a few years down the line, he'd be you know, playing the one of the biggest roles in Star Trek ever, you know. All right, so we'll go around the table, and Curtis, your thoughts on this episode?
Pretty cool. Casey Biggs is the guy who plays Damar, and yes. I like watching him on screen. He jumps into it. He's a little bit of a minor character at first, of course, but
yep.
as the series goes on, I really enjoy, in particular, watching him play the doctor in the mental hospital in later episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's just my whole thing, where I like seeing them step outside of their normal set of shoes. So yeah, for me, it's super cool, and the fact that Kira has to go in and kind of help out Dukat. I mean, we saw a little bit of that last episode, I think. The last episode of the podcast we did. Was that the last one? Anyway, they went and rescued Zeal. I like mm-hmm. seeing Kira yep. and Dukat together. That's always a good time. Yeah, great episode.
And also, was married to B'Elanna, right, in real life, I believe? Because she's Roxanne Biggs Dawson, right? And
right.
he's Casey Biggs.
I believe they had a child together before they divorced.
Yeah. Neat.
I learned something cool.
Yeah. Ragnar, your thoughts?
Oh, this is a great episode. I mean, Gul Dukat is one of my all-time favorite Star Trek characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would classify him as a villain, but he does do a lot of good stuff, and not all of his motivations are necessarily evil. So he's a very nuanced villain. And this episode has one of my favorite little bits with him, where he's trying to reassure Major Kira that this is only a temporary setback for him. And I just love that he's always so ambitious, and no matter what hand he gets dealt, he always finds a way to climb back to the top.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, great episode.
And boy, does he climb to the top when he does.
Yeah.
and Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Actually, this is probably one of my favorite episodes of the season. It's done really well. I like that one of the first, like, the first iteration, like, the actresses of Zial shows her as a very young, naive, like, child individual, which she was. But then they sort of, like, moved on, and she became more mature and grown up. And with different actresses, you could see that in her look, which I appreciated that. And I think during their dinner scene, they opened up one of the last bottles of spring wine that Dukat has. And I just think to myself, was that in of itself, was that a bit of a play, because Bajoran spring wine, she's Bajoran, and he's trying to woo her, not that he ever will, ever. But yeah, great episode. I love how they bait and switch on the Klingons, take him out. Like, I love Klingons, but they got duped. Mm-hmm. They got done. They got tricked, and it was pretty cool. And yeah, the introduction of Damar was awesome. He did pretty well. But overall, it was a really, really great episode, honestly. I think that's all I got to say about that.
And I always thought it was pretty badass that Dukat and Damar were just going to go out there and basically launch a guerrilla war against the Klingons, because, like, the Cardassians were like, no, we're not going to retaliate, right? And then Dukat and Damar just go out there on their own with their own bird of prey. I thought it was pretty badass, those two.
I have to agree with that statement, yeah.
All right, well, next episode is episode 87th of the series, 15th of the season, and it's The Sons of Moog. Stardate 49556.2, directed by David Livingston, written by Ronald D. Moore. Original air date, February 12th, 1996. Cast out of Klingon society because of Worf's dishonor, his brother Kern asks Worf to kill him. Kira and O'Brien investigate a mysterious high-energy discharge just outside Bajoran space. Alright, so I have a few thoughts about this episode. I liked it. Tony Todd as Kern. you know, I love the dynamic. You know, I wasn't completely happy with the end of the episode. You know, with the whole lobotomy aspect of it. Not a lobotomy, but you know, brain wipe or whatever, making him into a new person. I always wanted Kern to come back somehow. I always wanted him to figure out what happened and for him to come back. And I just, like, honestly, like, this Dishonor was, I don't know, I was kind of confused by it. Like, the original Dishonor, like, when Worf was dishonored by the Klingon Empire in Star Trek Next Generation, it was because, you know, he was answering for his father's perceived crimes, right? But with this one, I didn't realize that Worf was actually dishonored. I thought, like, he was just basically cast out. Like, I didn't realize that Worf's actions would affect his brother. So my kind of nitpick of this is, what about Kern's family? Because it's established in Star Trek The Next Generation that Kern has children, that he has a family. You know, and that he basically took over the House of Moog on Kronos, you know, after it was revealed he was the son of Moog. And, you know, because Worf ain't there, he's, you know, him and his family kind of, you know, moved into the House of Moog. Like, what happened to his family? And, you know, like, it's never really been explained. Like, I didn't even, like, honestly, I didn't even know Kern had a family until that episode of The Next Generation Season 7, the one with the old Alexander coming back in time. Because it's the old Alexander that tells the young Alexander, you know, you should go to Kronos. Your uncle, you know, and, it, you know, it has children. You can learn from them. It would be good for you to, you know, hang out with your cousins. So, like, this episode focuses on Kern. But at the end of it, I kept asking myself, like, where's his family? Like, this episode, like, I don't know, it's almost like that writer of that episode didn't pass along his notes, I guess. I don't know. That being said, I do like this episode for what it is, although I don't like what they did to Kern ultimately. Especially considering, you know, a year later, Worf, you know, becomes a son of, or a member of the House of Martok, and Kern would have been an excellent member of that house as well. Plus, you know, Tony Todd, I love Tony Todd in this role. Like, I wanted to see more of him. Kind of like, you know, like Thomas Riker. You know, how they never brought him back, even though they kind of implied they would. I kind of felt the same way with Kern. Like, they should have brought him back. Like, they should have done something with him in the end. I kind of felt it was a disservice to the character. But other than that, I like the episode. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I have the same quibbles that you previously mentioned there. Otherwise, I liked it. I think it's a good episode if you can get past that little continuity error. Tony Todd is always phenomenal. But there's one other thing I want to nitpick in here. There's one part where Kern is, I think he's in the medical bay talking to Bashir, and his nose prosthetic has come loose. And they use the shot, but you can see his nose flapping around whenever he talks or moves his head. Drives me nuts. Every time I watch this episode, I just fixate on that. It just kills me. But other than those issues, yeah, it's a great episode. Lots of awesome Klingon moments.
Well, I'm going to have to rewatch that just for that, because I don't think I ever noticed that before. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah.
Richard.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I thought it was a really good episode, but like you, I don't like, I think that they killed off Kern. He's one of my favorite characters, one of the most badass Klingons, and Worf's brother. I mean, theoretically, he would have eventually joined the House of Martok, and it would have been great. I don't know, man. I miss Tony Todd because he did such justice to the character. Like, he really brought it alive. And I never noticed that nose prosthetic thing. And I'm mad at Ragnar right now for pointing it out, because I'm never going to, like, not remember that now. But aside from that, it was a great episode, and I really like the rituals. There's rituals for everything, Klingon culture, and I thought that was really cool, because Worf is, you know, honor-bound to maintain Klingon customs and rituals, and he's, you know, putting his honor aside, and he's like, yeah, let's do it. And, of course, a cameo by Vorchok class, Be Still My Beating Heart. And the side plot was all right, like with the cloaked mines and stuff. Yep. And that there. Then there was a little undercover mission that was pretty cool. But yeah, I really want to know what happened to his family. Like, he must have sent his kids away to live with another family and something. He must have just left his wife. Maybe he just didn't care anymore. Or his wife left him, something like that.
Well, but, that's something I've always wanted to know a little bit more about Kern, because we know that prior to him, you know, coming out as a son of Mok, he lived with a different Klingon family, so he was raised by, you know, like, what happened to those people? Like, you know, like his adopted parents? Like, maybe they took in his family? I don't know.
That's likely, but it's all, like, headcanon, right?
Yeah.
But aside from that, it was a fantastic episode. I enjoyed it. It's a sad episode, but it was good either way.
Yeah, agreed. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
You know, this is one of my favorite Klingon episodes. Strangely enough. I know that just rubbed Richard and Ragnar the wrong way. But it really is. Worf is a terrible family member. Like, to everybody. To his blood relations, to his adopted family. He's just bad. And he did Kern so dirty in this episode. Like, Kern, all Kern ever wanted was for the Sons of Mok to be reunited again! Or whatever the hell it was that he says. And Worf just does this to him. I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe, like, every time I do a rewatch, I'm like, okay, this time around, Worf's not gonna fuck his brother over that bad. This is gonna be the time. Well, real quick, I did want to mention, isn't the future Alexander that you mentioned, Chris, isn't that the same guy who also played Dr. Mora in Deep Space? Okay.
Yep.
I wasn't sure about that. I just wanted to clarify. I like that guy.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, he's one of those actors that keeps just showing up in Star Trek.
Yeah, he was on Voyager, too.
Yep. Yep.
I'm getting sidetracked here. I even took notes. Okay, so the continuity error that you were mentioning with Kern's family.
Yep.
I was thinking, if Kern was dishonored and that led him to go to Deep Space Nine, maybe his family suffered some sort of punishment at the hands of the council for Kern's dishonor, perhaps. I don't know. That's my thoughts on that. But
yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it just always bugged me that, you know, like, it was never brought up. It's like, you know, those TV shows that, you know, they have characters that are there and then all of a sudden they're not there anymore. Like, and they don't talk about them ever.
Well, and Kern was an awesome character. Probably my second favorite Klingon after Martok. I really enjoyed Kern. Probably because Tony Todd's just awesome at no matter what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he was like a Klingon's Klingon, you know? Like, when we met him in The Next Generation, it was just like, holy crap, who is this guy?
Yeah, exactly. I just think they could have, like, especially Ron Moore. Like, he's the Klingon guy. He writes, you know, he's the one that wrote the original episode that introduced Kern. You know, he's wrote a lot of Klingon episodes. I just think they should have done something better for him. You know, like, I half expected, like, Dax to, like, call in Kor or something and get Kor to take him on. You know, because Kor doesn't give a
crap. That would have been cool. Death at the hands of a Dahar master.
Well, not that would have been pretty sweet. Well, not death. I'm just thinking, like, Kor would come in and be like, yeah, join my ship. You know, because,
take him on that way. Okay.
Yeah, because Kor doesn't like Gowron. He doesn't give a shit about the Emperor. Like, he said that in his previous episode he was just on. Like, I could totally see Korra being cool with Kern, you know, showing, you know, doing Worf a solid, right?
I could see it, yeah.
But, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, this... no, I feel so bad for Kern at the end, after he's gone through the procedure, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know who he is, and I'm like, oh man, like, that's such a tragedy. Like, so much. I don't know, it hits me in the feels.
Me too. Great.
Every what time... is with Tony Todd? Jesus.
He is amazing. But yeah, every time I watch this episode, I always it makes me sad, because it's like we never see Kern again. You know?
And it's a real shame.
Yeah, it is. It really is. All right, so the next episode is episode 88 of the series, 16th of the season, and that's Bar Association. Stardate 49565.1, directed by LeVar Burton. Story by Barbara J. Lee and Jennifer A. Lee. Teleplay by Robert Hewitt Wolf and Ira Stephen Bear. Original air date, February 19th, 1996. After he nearly dies because his contract kept him from seeking medical help, Rom organizes the Guild of Restaurant and Casino Employees, a union for Quark's downtrodden staff, and they go on strike when their demands for fairer treatment are rejected. Yeah, love this episode. You know, Jeffrey Combs, you know, as Brunt. I love Brunt. I love the fact that he has a couple of Nausicaan bodyguards in this episode. I love the fact that to send a message to Rom, they beat up Quark. I love the B story too. Like, when Worf's quarters is robbed, you know, that scene with him and Odo where, you know, he throws the culprit, you know, at Odo's desks and Odo's guys, you know, take him away. And then, you know, Worf says, this never happened on the Enterprise. And Odo gets that big smile on his face. And, oh, really? And then he's got that data pad with all the times the Enterprise got, you know, robbed or taken out or whatever. That was awesome.
Or, you know, stolen.
Stolen, yeah. By the Ferengi Ferengi mutineers or whatever they were. The fact that Worf and O'Brien get into a bar fight, and Bashir ends up, I think he ends up with a, get roughed up a little bit, because he tries to get between them, and then Sisko leaves him in the brig overnight. This episode all around, I loved everything about it. I love, you know, what Rom went through. I love the fact that at the end of the episode, he joins, you know, the Bajoran militia as an engineer. I thought that was such an awesome step up for the character. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, man. Such a great episode. Just the history of O'Brien, Aloysius O'Brien, I just thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, you could say that the Guild of Restaurant and... Guild of Restaurant and Casino Employees. You could make that acronym GRACE, which I thought that was kind of cool. It's a little bit of a stretch, but I don't mind. But aside from that, I thought it was great. And I love Brunt. And, I mean, mm-hmm. who else would Brunt bring his bodyguards than some, like, two just nonchalant, don't-give-a-fuck Nausicaans? Because that's what Nausicaans are like. But yeah, aside from that, great episode. I thought it's not a skip episode for me, and that's for sure.
Well, they're badass when they're playing a game where they're literally throwing daggers at each other.
Yeah, darts into their chest and abdomen.
Oh, is it darts?
WCF.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's darts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was O'Brien's darts, wasn't it?
Okay.
Am I just imagining that?
They might have been. I just assumed they were like little daggers they were throwing at each other. But Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, man, I love it so much. Jeffrey Combs being one of my favorite Star Trek actors of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a good villain in Brunt. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this episode was the reason they went to him, and they're like, so we need an evil Andorian for a new series.
Mm-hmm.
And we liked what you did in this episode. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And of course, like you mentioned, Sisko's sense of humor gets to make one of those appearances, and that's always fun to see.
Yep.
Lita gets a little bit of a role here, and that's good. Usually she only gets a couple of lines, and she actually has some things to say for this episode, and that's cool, because obviously Chase Masterson's just, she's mm-hmm. so cool.
Yep.
Yeah, you were there that year. She's just yep. so cool to be around and talk to.
Oh, and beautiful. So beautiful.
Oh, of course. I think she was in her 50s when we met her, and she was still just drop-dead gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Richard got a hug from her. Lucky SOB.
Nice.
Yeah,
super good episode. Love it. Love the Ferengi episodes. I'm the weirdo in the group that way, I know, but...
Oh, I love them, too. I love them, too.
Especially Brent.
Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, can't say too much without just repeating what you guys have all said. I will say this episode has one of my favorite Star Trek lines in it, which is when Rom is telling Quark, "She kissed me, she kissed me." And Quark says, "Oh, there's no accounting for taste." Yeah, overall, great episode. Definitely not a skip episode. Has a little bit of humor, has a little bit of like social commentary. Yeah, all around good episode.
Excellent. All right, well, let's move on to episode 89, 17th of the season. And that's Accession. I thought it was Ascension, but I think it's Accession.
It is Accession.
Yeah, Accession. Accession. Stardate 49600.7, directed by Les Landau, written by Jane Espenson. Original air date February 26, 1996. A famous Bajoran poet, Akram Leon. I can't remember, who disappeared over 200 years ago, appears from the wormhole and convinces Sisko that he is the true emissary. But when he announces a return to the pre-occupation caste system, Sisko points out it would disqualify Bajor for membership in the Federation. O'Brien is less than enthusiastic when Keiko announces she's expecting. This is one of the reasons why I don't remember the name of the guy. Is this is one that I kind of skip. I do believe Kyle Paca returns in this episode, if I remember correctly,
yep.
in a vision. Because their paws, it's a weird name. Yeah, their paw will meet again, and I guess this was it. Honestly, it's one, like I said, one I skip, one of the weaker ones of the season, and again, O'Brien must suffer by having another child. not to knock Hiroyoshi, so Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I really enjoyed seeing Kyle Paca again, because I really mm-hmm. liked her. Basically, she's everything the Kai should be versus, you know, Kai Wynn, who's everything that the Kai should not be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to lie, this is one of the ones I often skip when I'm rewatching the series. It's not a bad episode, just this doesn't hold my attention the way some of the other episodes in this season did.
Yeah. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Is this the one where Worf also finds out that Keiko is expecting and completely freaks out?
I think
because
so.
Because he had to deliver Molly.
Yep.
And he did not want anything to do with another delivery. hilarious. That's my favorite part of the whole episode, if I'm being honest. Just hilarious. Incidentally, you guys kept saying poch. I actually think that's pretty close to the Klingon word for time, is it not?
Hmm.
I'm not sure.
Anyway,
you could be right.
I thought it was the word for the soul, like your spirit.
In Bajoran, yes, but poch, I think like P apostrophe O-H, I think is how it was spelled. I think that I'm quite certain that's Klingon time. Oh, but maybe. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked again. Jeez. No, great episode. I thought it was really cool, like a little bit of social commentary with the caste system. And I don't know, it's just stuff like that's fascinating. Anything like any social issues like that, like you see like, oh, we've made some progress as a society. And then all of a sudden they're going backwards. Mm-hmm. And these people are just okay with like, oh, yes, I'm lesser than you now because I am lowborn and you are born in this. Like, it's so foreign to us that it's interesting to watch in mm-hmm. the setting because we don't get to see that. Well, I don't get to see that anyway. Maybe it's over some reason. No, it's just a cool commentary. Interesting episode.
Excellent. And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I thought it was interesting. The dude, Akoram Lon, he was starting to write poetry and things like that, and he never did finish it, but then he came back, and they thought that they could, you know, reintroduce the Jaras, but we found out that was a really bad idea because, you know, people were dying. You know, the Jaras and caste systems, I personally don't really think that they work or they're necessary. You know, trying to force people into these, like, you know, roles. I don't really care for it myself. I did appreciate that Kyle Paca did show up in a vision because I love Kyle Paca because she's pretty much the best ever, essentially. Yeah, beyond that, you know, Kiriyoshi, it's a good episode. But not my, like, number one favorite, but it was pretty cool. That's pretty much all I have to say about that.
All right. So next episode is episode 90 of the series, 18th of the season, Rules of Engagement, Stardate 49665.3, directed once again by LeVar Burton, story nice. By David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, April 8th, 1996. Worf accidentally destroys a civilian ship during a battle and faces a hearing to determine whether or not he should be extradited to the Klingon Empire. Yeah, I like this episode. You know, had some good guest stars, in particular Ron Canada as Chapok. I like that actor. He's in a lot of different shows that I watch. I just seen him in Babylon 5. During season one of Babylon 5, I've just been rewatching that. Yeah, it was a good courtroom drama. I liked the fact that did Worf do it? Didn't Worf do it? You know, of course it was a setup. And he was vindicated, but he definitely was a little trigger happy there. But overall, I thought it was a good episode. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Actually, this is one of my favorite episodes. I really like the idea that, you know, the Klingon Empire does have a legal system in that fashion, and Japok was so good. Ron Canada is one of my favorite, like, special guests. He's mm-hmm. he's been in several Star Trek episodes. He was on TNG and Deep Space Nine, and I can't remember what other ones, but definitely TNG. And, you know, a little bit of history with, like, the Battle of Tong Vae and, you know, with Emperor Sam Peck. But I don't like that they, you know, because hindsight is always 20/20. Like, you know what to do after the fact. And they put O'Brien on the spot. They're like, you know, what would you do? But now knowing he's completely biased, he can't actually say. In that situation, I would have done the same as Worf, honestly. You know, they're playing the same pattern, you know, rinse and repeat.
Yep.
And I guess they, you know, they played him and he fell for it, which is unfortunate. But I thought it was a great episode. It was really well done. A lot of good drama. A lot of good acting. And Ron Canada just pulls it out. Mm-hmm. I really dig it. Fantastic episode, but that's all I got to say about that.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Like Richard, this is definitely one of my favorite episodes, probably of the series. I love the courtroom drama sort of setting to echo what everyone is pretty much obligated to say. Ron Canada does amazing in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much fun to see him as this character. And the way that I think him and Avery Brooks did really well together, eliciting eliciting performances from the other as they sort of go back and their characters go back and forth. We get to see some real passion coming out of Sisko, where he's not necessarily yelling in an authoritative manner as is his style, but we get to see him speaking just in that like menacing Sisko, you know, you're not going to win, and that's the way it is sort of way that he has of doing that.
Yeah.
Of course, like, who doesn't like a twist ending when they got the real story about, you know, the fact that Worf did in fact blow up an empty ship.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, we actually get to see a couple examples of outside of usual Klingon behavior, where we have the deception in the midst of a battle, like you guys were just talking about, the ship's cloaking and decloaking,
yeah,
and then to like pull a fast one on them. That's more like a Romulan inspired sort of thing. I think that, you know, if Kern were still around and he was on the battlefield, he'd call him out for being a coward.
Yep.
But then we also get to see the Shepok. Is that his name? Shepok doing his thing. And that's, we don't get to see that often. When do we see that? The Undiscovered Country, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Klingons in a legal setting. So that was super cool. Love this episode.
Excellent. And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I just wanted to touch on what Curtis was saying there. It was cool to see a Klingon in a, you know, not warrior position, because really we've seen the Klingon chef and, you know, there's just a handful of other examples of Klingons that we encounter that aren't warriors. So I thought that was really interesting. And yeah, and Shepok was played super well by Ron Canada there. Yeah, it was a good episode. You know, good twist. Kept you wondering what was going on for the whole episode. And
yep.
Yeah, it's not one that I skip. But yeah, it's not a particularly amazing episode, but it's a good one.
Yep. Excellent. All right, so the next episode is the 91st of the series, 19th of the season, and it's Hard Time. Stardate 49680.5. Alexander Singer was the director. Written by, story by Daniel Keyes Moran and Lynn Barker. Teleplay by Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date April 15th, 1996. O'Brien's mind has been altered to create memories of being incarcerated for 20 years on an alien world on charges of espionage and sedition. All right. You know, out of all the O'Brien Must Suffer episodes, this is probably my favorite. Like, he did such a, you know, Colm Meaney did such a great job in this episode. And I'll be honest with you. Like, this episode, you know, I remember the first couple times I saw it, it brought tears to my eyes at the end of the episode when, you know, O'Brien is contemplating suicide. You know, and then you find out that, you know, he'd been in that prison with, Ijar.
Ijar.
Yeah. And that, you know, he, you know, accidentally killed him, you know, over food, you know, because he was starving, right? And, you know, it's so sad. And you know, that actor did an amazing job who played Ijar. And I thought Alexander Siddig, you know, did a great job, you know, because he knows something's going on with O'Brien. And it's crazy. It's crazy to think, you know, how bad that would be, you know, to, you know, having to have, even though he didn't technically live through it, in his mind, he lived through it. It's kind of like, you know, what Picard went through when, you know, in The Inner Light. You know, where he lived a life on that alien planet. This is very similar. Like, to O'Brien, he lived 20 years in prison. And yeah, like, This is one of my favorite episodes, and you know, they did such a good job all around with all the acting and the emotions, and like I said, it brought a tear to my eye when I first few times I seen it. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Definitely tugs on the heartstrings, buddy. This is one of the episodes I remember watching when it aired, and it's one of the ones that stuck with me through most of my life until I finally eventually watched the series again when I was an adult. For instance, I've been bored and used the draw a circle and then draw stuff inside the circle. I've actually done that. It doesn't ever look good at all. But I tried it just because I remembered the episode and it stuck with me so well. But you're right. It's extraordinarily difficult not to feel real empathy for the character O'Brien in this episode. Mm-hmm. Nicole Meany, like you say, knocks it out of the park. I've had people in my life who were feeling much like O'Brien was, and he really does a bang up job of conveying, like, I am seriously ready to end it. And Bashir wants to help him, but O'Brien is still so preoccupied with being O'Brien that it's almost like he can't let Bashir help him just because of that. I don't know if it's an Irish thing or just an O'Brien thing, but like almost that pride kind of aspect that like prevents him from accepting help. That's super cool. It's not cool, but it's entertaining.
Yeah,
definitely. Super good episode.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, I love this episode. When I was a kid and a teenager, I loved prison movies and prison stories. So this one hit home in a big way for me. Mm-hmm. And then I really like the concept of, you know, they implant these memories. So you think you've done this punishment, but you didn't. You're on, you know, it was an afternoon missing from your life. I thought that was a really cool idea, and I'm not saying that we should necessarily do that, but I think it's a very interesting concept for, you know, for the prison system to think about down the road. So, yeah, no, great episode. Definitely loved it. And, poor O'Brien just always has to suffer.
Yep. And, Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I love this episode. Another O'Brien suffers episode, which we get so many of, but he literally kills it, and it actually touches like super, super deep, like heartstrings for me. And like Curtis said, you know, we've had a friend that didn't go back. So, you know, we know what it's like kind of like on the other side of that. And I, for one, personally, I appreciate that, you know, Bashir was able to talk him out of it and say, like, hey, you do have people that care about you. And this was like a big sort of like mental health thing, you know, like you're allowed to be weak sometimes and you're still a good person. And this is like a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I just really liked it. Like, they didn't, like, I don't think that they fucked it up in any way. They did it with some grace, and they did it justice.
Yep.
And, yeah, it definitely, you know, was an emotional episode. And I'm going to say, yeah, definitely a great episode, honestly. That's about that.
Yep, agreed. All right, so the next episode of the series is episode 92, 20th of the season. And that Shattered Mirror, Stardate 49699.1, directed by James L. Conway, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Hans Beimler, original air date April 22nd, 1996. Sisko attempts to rescue Jake after he's lured into the war-torn mirror universe by his mother's living counterpart. So yeah, this is another mirror universe episode. They built a mirror universe Defiance in this episode, which is crazy, I think, given that, you know, the Defiant was created at the Utopia Planitia shipyards, and I guess all you need is the blueprints, and then anyone can build a Defiant, I guess? I don't know. That always kind of bugged me. It was fun to see Nog as, you know, running his uncle's bar. It was cool seeing Worf as the evil warlord Klingon. That was cool. Having Garak as his prisoner. I'm not a big fan of the Mirror Universe episodes. But this was, another Mirror Universe episode. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, as far as the Mirror Universe episodes go, this one felt a little tired to me.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that, now that Worf's part of the cast, we have to shoo him into the Mirror Universe, so they just create a new character for him to become. I thought that was kind of, both kind of silly, but also kind of fun.
Yep.
As a whole, the Mirror Universe ones, I think kind of they started out pretty good, and the more of them they did, the less good they got. And this, by the time you get to this one, it's kind of like, oh, great, another Mirror Universe. Okay, all right. So, yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Again, another Mirror Universe episode. Yeah, it had its cool bits, and, they could build ships. I guess it's not that difficult. Just, get some metal together and just put some beams and weld it up. I mean, they've got Smiley. Dude can do anything, which he can. So, it doesn't actually bother me that they built the Defiant. It was kind of cool seeing Jennifer Sisko. She's pretty great. But all in all, I wouldn't feel bad if I missed this one.
Agreed. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Now, normally I do enjoy the Mirror Universe episodes. This is not one of the ones I particularly enjoy. There's some cool moments in it. I agree with Ragnar. Worf was definitely shoehorned in to just this complete goof of a character. He's so sick. Like, is it when you think to later episodes and stuff? He's just such a goon. Just banging his fists and punching his voice out and...
Yeah, but I bet you he loved doing it.
Oh, probably. Like, and that's always the fun part about the Mirror Universe episodes for me is they get to wear a different pair of shoes for an episode, so that's fun. But what the hell? How'd they build a Defiant? Like, really? It took 200 years, 300 years of Federation ingenuity to come up with this ship, and then all they needed was a blueprint, and they were like, oh yeah, cool, we got all that stuff right over here, no problem. Like, what? Where'd you get the materials?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, the materials, the engineers, the manpower.
Right?
Yeah.
The dilithium or whatever the hell powers the warp engine in the Defiant.
Yeah.
Getting the mix right. Like, you need an engineer to run all that stuff. Anyway. No, it's sort of fun. But it's fun in the way that it gets me ready to have a nap through the next episode. And so that's good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, the thing with the Shattered, with the Mirror Universe episodes is now you can just beam back and forth, right? Like, when it happened on the original series, it was a complete accident. They didn't know how it happened. Same with the first time they did it on Deep Space Nine. It was, accident through traveling through the wormhole. But now it's like, we can just beam back and forth anytime we want.
And you'd think that Starfleet would be interested in that and would come out with some regulations or something. Like, it wouldn't just be like, oh yeah, we do this thing at Deep Space Nine, but we don't talk about it in any of our reports, and it's not a big deal anywhere else in the galaxy.
Well, it would have been cool if they would have and this is something I'd love to talk to Iris Demonbear about, next, if I ever meet him again. If they would have maybe shoehorned it in somehow to the Dominion, maybe the Dominion would cross over and be like, hey, we want your guys' help with the Federation, and then we'll help you. Something like that. But just, I don't know. The fact that it was its own thing,
The Dominion are so xenophobic. Do you think that, if the Prime Universe Dominion found out about the Mirror Universe Dominion, they'd want to go to war with them. Just well, was like, oh, they're outsiders. And they're that's just me being silly, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There was definitely potential there, but it just kind of became silly. It almost, like, the Mirror Universe episodes for Deep Space Nine basically were like the Q episodes on Next Generation. It was just an excuse for the crew to have fun and do different things, right?
Maybe that's okay.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that either. I just kind of wish they would have done a little bit more with it in the main story. But anyway, I digress. I believe I went through everybody on this episode. All right. So did I miss anybody?
No.
Okay. Let us move on to the next episode. That's episode 93 of the series, 21st of the season, and that's The Muse. Stardate 49702.2, directed by David Livingston. Story by Renee Echevarria and Majel Barrett Roddenberry. Teleplay by Renee Echevarria. Original air date, April 29th, 1996. While Odo assists a pregnant Luoxana a Troy, Jake falls under the spell of the mysterious woman, Onaya? Yeah. This is one I skip, definitely. Yes. I should point out that, as far as I know, this is the last appearance of Majel Barrett as Luoxana Troy in Star Trek. Which is so weird that they didn't bring her back, or because she married Odo in this episode. Odo is married to Luoxana Troy in this episode. So what? Like, that's another plot thread that they never ever address ever again. And I understand it's a marriage of convenience that there's not really love and all that kind of stuff, but still, Odo's married to Luoxana Troy. It's so weird they never address that later on.
It's filed away with Thomas Riker somewhere.
Yeah, and Kern. The story with Jake falling under the spell of that woman. The only neat thing about that is that actress who plays that character is also the same actress who plays Evil Lyn in the Masters of the Universe movie.
Oh, cool.
Other than that, that's all I got. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
It's an all right episode. I like the Luoxana Troy bit. You know, as I've gotten older, and in Deep Space Nine, I've enjoyed her more. The other plot, I don't know which one's which, but the other one, the Sisko plot, was like, you know, kind of sucks. Not my favorite, but like I said, this one is also one of the ones that if I skip, I won't feel bad.
Yeah. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, like I said about the last episode, it generally gets me ready for a nap, which is nice. It's nice to have a mid-season nap. So I pretty much sleep through this one because I just don't care for it. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was the last time we see the Luoxana Troy, who she's hit and miss for me, mm-hmm. really.
Me too.
Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not so great. And this one, it wasn't so great, I don't think. I think they could have given her a bit of a better send-off. But
yeah.
I mean, she's been in two series, so they could have done something. Same with Kern. They could have done better for both of them. Wow, what a bad season this is for ending people's appearances. Just, ugh.
For real, for real.
Ugh, I'm depressed now. I think that's all I have to say about that one.
And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
I liked the dynamic between Odo and Luoxana, and I liked how he went out of his way to help her, which is the way he did it is sort of out of character for Odo. But I also am with you guys that how come we never went back to that, or how come it never came up again that, you know, he married her and all this stuff. And I also wanted to mention the guy who plays Loxana's husband It is, I believe, the same actor who played Kang.
Yeah, that's Michael Cera. You're right. I've meant to mention that.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, he killed it because Michael Cera is awesome.
Oh, yeah, and
I didn't realize it except that I had recognized his name in the credits. It didn't look or sound similar to Kang. It was just the name stuck out.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, thanks for pointing that out. I completely forgot he was on that episode.
Yeah. Anytime.
it was a good episode. Yep.
All right. So the next episode, episode 94th of the series, 22nd of the season, For the Cause, stardate 49729.8, directed by James L. Conway, story by Mark Gerard O'Connell, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. May 6th, 1996 was the original air date. Sisko learns that his girlfriend, Cassidy, might be a Maquis smuggler. Garak has taken an interest in Gul Dukat's half-Bajoran daughter, Tora Zial. I loved this episode. I think it's fantastic. I love the bait and switch. You know, because I remember, I can't remember what magazine. This is pre-internet. This is back when I used to buy Starlog. I used to buy Sci-Fi Universe, those kind of things. And they did an interview with Kenneth Marshall. I think it might have been when he was in Season 3 of Deep Space Nine, maybe beginning of Season 4. And he really threw a hint out there that he might be a changeling. So I love the fact that he threw that out there.
While it was live? That's dirty.
Yeah.
Dirty.
Well, I love that he did that. And then
good for him, though. Yeah.
I never suspected he would have been a Maquis because of it. Because I'm like, oh, I kept watching him. I'm like, they're going to, eventually he's going to come out as a changeling. He's going to be exposed. And no, he's a member, not only a member of the Maquis, but he becomes the leader of the Maquis after he leaves the station, which I was kind of sad about because I like that character. I like that actor. And I love this episode also for the fact that Cassidy Yates, we don't know what's going on with her. She is up to something, but she is doing a noble thing, and she ends up having to go to prison for it. You know, like, that's something you really don't see, aside from Thomas Riker, a fate for Star Trek characters,
unlike Thomas Riker, she was willing to go to prison for it.
Like, yeah.
She accepted that was consequence. That was cool.
Yeah. So, like, I remember when she left, I was like, oh, man, Sisko gets a girlfriend, and a beautiful girlfriend, and an awesome girlfriend, and now she's gone. I had no idea they were going to bring her back. I'm glad they did. Spoilers. But, yeah, I was sad to see her go. I was not expecting that. And, as always, Andrew Robinson, as Garak. I love... I believe it was this episode when Kira throws him up against the wall and basically warns him off, leaves the owl alone.
Yeah.
That was excellent. Overall, I really like this episode. I think it's great. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Fun episode. Usually I'm waking up from my nap, so, it's got to be engaging to get me back into it. And this one totally delivers. It's cool to see Garak get back into, like, his old element again, thinking like a spy. And the twist with Eddington was super cool. I also really enjoy Eddington. And I think making him leader of the Maquis might have been a bit much, but, I can live with it. Just being a Maquis was super cool. And, it's a very clever villain. I can appreciate clever villain.
Yeah.
And I dig that. And it was cool to see, like, you've got so much faith built up in Captain Sisko thus far after watching for almost four seasons now. And then to see him get punked, it's like, oh, good, he's not totally overpowered. Someone can still, like, got one over on him, you know. Mm-hmm. That's good to see. Totally enjoyable episode.
Yep. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I think this was a great episode. I think I enjoyed the whole thing. I think it's a good one. No, it's not a skipper for me, that's for sure.
Excellent.
Yeah. I love Cassidy Yates just so much. Mm-hmm. And I was super bummed, you know, about mm-hmm. how this episode worked out. It was like, oh my God, she's a traitor, but she's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
And super cute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely have a huge crush on her. And I still do when I watch her in Orville. I still... Mm-hmm. She barely looks like she's aged today, but it's been more than 20 years. It's crazy.
Yep.
And then, of course, I like the whole thing with Garrick and Zial. They kind of have this, you know, are they going to hook up? Are they not going to hook up thing? Definitely complicates the whole theory of Garrick being gay.
Mm-hmm.
That he's bisexual, which, you know, whatever. Yeah, that's all I got to say about that one.
All right. And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really liked this episode. Again, like Curtis said, somebody was able to pull the wool over Sisko's eyes in glorious fashion. Just pulls the biggest fast one on him, and he had no clue. I did appreciate that Cassidy Yates, you know, took her punishment, and you know, she did drop off her crew, and she took responsibility for that, and she knew that, like, she wasn't really doing anything wrong per se. She was just aiding the traitors, which is what the problem was. She was delivering, like, medical supplies and such, but she did her time, and, you know, Sisko waited, which was good, and this is where Zial starts to become... You know, a mature woman, very attractive in my opinion. And just in general, fantastic episode. A lot of good drama, a lot of out of the blue dynamics you didn't even think about. But Eddington just basically becoming the leader of the Maquis was a little bit extra for me, just because it sort of was like, I mean, he just got there, you know, mm-hmm. have a little, take some time, work your way up the ranks, right? But I think Eddington has a bit of a complex, you know. I think maybe Sisko does too, but this just shows Eddington's complex in that, like, you know, he's got to be the leader, you know, the savior type dude. But yeah, all in all, what's that?
There's precedent for that, though. Cal Hudson back in, what was it, season two? Yeah. Cal Hudson. Oh, yeah, I'm former Starfleet, so, like, you know, I'm basically better than y'all, so I'm going to be the leader. I don't know. He's ex-Starfleet guys.
Well,
the nerve of him.
With him becoming leader, I just assumed it was because maybe the previous leadership had been killed, because it is revealed next year that Cal Hudson was killed, right?
Right, yeah, that's true.
And not just that, but I figured Eddington, with his, you know, vast knowledge of Starfleet security, he probably brought a lot to the table and probably did a lot for the Maquis more than I think anyone realized. Up until he was exposed, right? Which, you know, he chose. Like, he could have still stayed. Sense. You know, but he didn't. He wanted to leave. But anyway, the next episode on the list is the 95th of the series, 23rd of the season, and that is To the Death. Stardate 49904.2, directed by LeVar Burton. Written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolfe. Original air date, May 13th, 1996. Sisko and the Defiant crew joins forces with the Jem'Hadar to stop a group of Jem'Hadar renegades from gaining power using an Iconian gateway discovered in the Gamma Quadrant. Note, this is the first appearance of the Vorta Weyoun. Yeah, one of my favorite episodes of the season. One of my favorite episodes of the series. A lot of great guest stars. Of course, Jeffrey Combs as Weyoun, you know, making his first appearance in that role. Clarence Williams III as Omediclon was fantastic. Brian Thompson as Tomantarok is someone that we have. He is an actor we have seen in previous Star iterations of Star Trek as well. Also, he's the bounty hunter on the X-Files. But yeah, no, this was a great episode. The beginning, seeing the one of the pylons of Deep Space Nine destroyed was pretty shocking. And then just, getting to it, going through the wormhole and they're going to go kick some ass. I love the callback to the Iconians, because that's probably my favorite, one of my favorite episodes from season two of The Next Generation was when they found the Iconian homeworld. And I love the fact that Worf brings that up in this episode. Just a lot of good action, the hand-to-hand combat, Sisko and the crew working together with the Jem'Hadar was a cool concept. Omediclon killing Tomantarok for disobeying his orders was shocking and amazing at the same time. It speaks to, the honor system of the Jem'Hadar. This was one of my favorite episodes. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, yeah. This was a killer episode. I loved it because, it had a lot of action. So especially, young Ragnar watching this certainly enjoyed all of that. It was really cool to see, the Jem'Hadar, not being like so robotic. Like there was some of them that, had their own ideas about things.
Mm-hmm.
And, this is a great episode. I definitely recommend anybody who enjoys a little bit more action in their Star Trek to watch this episode.
And I should point out, aside from this being the first appearance of Weyoun, Jeffrey Combs as Weyoun, he also gets killed at the end of this episode. So,
yeah.
And this was before we knew that they were clones, that Vorta were clones. So I was sad. I was like, man, I like that Vorta, and they just killed him. So I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised in season 5 when he showed up with Dekat. I was like, awesome.
Weyoun is by far one of my favorite DS9 characters. And when I met Jeffrey Combs, I told him that. I said, I love Weyoun. And he said, yeah, everyone loves Weyoun. Nobody loves Brunt. Brunt was more fun to play.
Dude, I got to meet him now. Brunt was my favorite Jeffrey Combs character.
Oh, well, make sure you tell him that when you meet him.
I absolutely will.
Yeah, it's so hard, I'm torn between Weyoun and Brunt. It's tough. Shram was great, too, but yeah. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, just another real quick aside on Brunt and what he has to do with distant ties to this episode. And I know that every episode we do, I can't stop talking about Star Trek Online in some way, shape, or form. But, spoiler warning, y'all been warned.
It's also good having that perspective, though. Yep. It's kind of cool, actually.
Yep, it is, yep.
Well, there's so much additional lore in there, y'all got to, it's a free-to-play game. Go play the thing. There's so much more story. Henry Kim becomes a captain, finally. But anyway, back to what we were talking about.
Harry Kim or Henry Kim?
Harry Kim.
I heard Henry for some reason.
I don't know. But anyway, so the Iconians, who this episode has, a little bit to do with, they're not totally gone. And there might be a mission that you do in Star Trek Online that involves Brunt and a few of the other magnificent Ferengi who we'll meet in a later episode of Deep Space Nine. They might go and invade an Iconian base and have a fight with a species known as the Sphere Builders, who it turns out, this is a species that's been working for the Iconians for centuries. And they built the Dyson Sphere, that they found in the Next Generation, and also are the same species that were abducting Enterprise crew members in the TNG episode Schisms.
Really?
They were working for the Iconians. But anyway, I digress. Back to this episode. Dude, Jeffrey Combs, come on. So cool. I love all of his characters. And Wei-Yun, I thought, to me, it looked like he had more fun playing Wei-Yun than Brunt, but so that's good to know. I didn't pick up on that. It looks like he's having a great time, though. So.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, at the beginning, it's good to see such a blatant, like, act of destruction against the Federation, because it shows that they actually do have, it reinforces that, yes, they have vulnerabilities, they're not invincible. Kind of, for me, it kind of shook my faith a little bit, like, I was like, holy crap, like, they actually, like, there's mass casualties, people died, that pylon's gone, man. So that was cool to see. Really super enjoyable episode all around. I feel like I've rambled too long, so please.
Oh, no, it's all good. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Definitely one of my favorites. Fantastic episode. And I love that they're kind of like doing that throwback to the Iconians, because they did an episode in TNG, and they're doing this one. And I didn't know any of that that had to do with Brunt and how everything kind of like tied all back in together with Tisms and the other episodes. That's actually really cool to know.
Mm-hmm.
I did, but I never really got super into it. I might have to try it out again if I ever have time. And I just love the action, right? The action is fantastic. Just people shooting other people and beating them up with weapons and stuff. That's always really cool to see. And Wayne's top three, for sure, for me. I think Shran is my favorite Jeffrey Combs, followed by Brunt, and then closely followed by Wei-Yun. But Shran, for me, was just classic. I love Shran.
Shran's a total boss, man, for sure.
Right? 100%, 100%. But yeah, actually, this is a hell of a good episode. Fantastic guest stars. And they must have killed a lot of their budget with this episode. I'm sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know what else to say about it other than it just like totally kicked ass. Probably one of the best episodes of the season.
Could I interrupt for just a sec?
I'm done. Go on, buddy.
Just, Richard mentioning that you'll play if you have time. I'd just like to take a minute to congratulate the new father, Richard, on the arrival of your son. In the last week.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
He's definitely a little cutie. I got to go visit him last night. So congratulations.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Excellent. One thing I want to throw out there, you know, like I mentioned, I've been rewatching Babylon 5. And one of the things about Babylon 5 is you got these ancient races, right? But Star Trek also has ancient races that I wish they would explore a little bit more. Like I know Curtis said they are on Star Trek Online, but I just wish, like, in canon they would do, you know, something with the Iconians. I was always fascinated by the Iconians. I always wish that...
If I could... Sorry.
Well, I just wish they would have done something with the Iconians, and even, like, you know, like the Dominion. You know, like, we know that they've been around for over 2,000 years. Like, I would love...
I think it's 10,000 years.
Is it 10,000 years? I would love to know more about, you know, other than, you know, just the general backstory that we have. You know, like the changelings were hunted, then they, you know, created this organization and so on and so forth. I would just love to, for them to explore that just a little bit more.
If I may.
Sorry, Curtis, go ahead.
No worries. CBS has confirmed that Star Trek Online is canon, just so everyone knows. And there is more about the Dominion in there. There's an entire season, as it were, that's all about, you know, you, spoiler alert, you do some work for the Dominion, who is led by, someone anyway. And you do get to get quite a bit of backstory on them. And then in the part I was talking about earlier with the Iconians, you will get some more on the Iconians and what they've been up to and and things like that. I really encourage anyone who's got a reasonably decent computer. It's a free-to-play game. There's like in-game purchases that you don't have to make at all to get the story. Definitely encourage everyone to just check. If you got some free time, even a little bit, totally check it out.
I'll definitely check out maybe what's written about it. I don't like. I actually used to play Star Trek Online when it first launched, like when you actually had to pay for it.
It's very different.
Now. Oh yeah, I'm sure it is. But even back then, man, I spent hours and hours on that game. Like it was a lot of fun. I didn't have time, you know, to keep up with
it. No worries. They've streamlined a lot of it. Everything. All the missions are organized into like seasons now. It's but yeah, definitely. If you don't have time, absolutely read up on it. There's so much deep lore that they have in the game that was just so cool.
Excellent.
It's definitely worth the read.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. All right. Did I get through everyone? Ragnar? Did I?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next episode, which is episode 96 of the series, 24th of the season, and that's The Quickening, Stardate 49909.7, directed by René Auberjonois, written by Naren Shankar, original air date May 20th, 1996. Bashir tries to free the population of a Gamma Quadrant world in the Teplon system for an engineered disease left by the Dominion 200 years previously. Honestly, I don't have a lot to add to this episode. This is one I skip. So Richard, I'll throw it over to you. What are your thoughts, Richard?
Honestly, I'm in the same. I usually skip this one. Maybe I fall asleep during this one. It's probably pretty decent. It just wasn't for me, really.
Yeah.
And I don't really have anything else to say about it. Sorry, no. Guys.
Oh, that's fair. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
For once tonight, I don't have a lot to say. I'm with you guys. It is an episode. I like it fine enough. I don't skip it, but it's just not a... I like the healer aspect that we get to see, like, behind Bashir. He's got this, you know, the empathy of a doctor, and that's kind of cool, but it's... I don't know. Yeah, the episode does fall a little bit flat. It's a little bit sort of predictable, but I don't hate it.
Excellent. And Ragnar, your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely not one of my favorite episodes. For some reason, it kind of bothers me, and I felt this way with one of the characters in the show, Lost, as well, where like the doctor just refuses to give up and has to figure out a way to solve this problem. And it's not that I think that that's bad. It just, I don't know, there's just something about the, you know, the doctor's absolute refusal to quit that just, I don't know, gets on my nerves for some reason. And I think it's because in this episode it's sort of, you know how it's going to end at the end. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an episode.
And yep. I can't wait to talk about Lost with you. We're going to have so much fun, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. The second last episode of the season is episode 97th of the series, 25th of the season. And it's Body Parts, Stardate 49930.3, directed by Avery Brooks. Story by Louis P. DeSantis and Robert J. Bolivar. Teleplay by Hans Beimler. Original air date June 10th, 1996. Quark is diagnosed with a terminal disease, Duroc syndrome, and given a week to live. Due to an unavoidable accident to the runabout Volga, Miles and Keiko's unborn baby is transferred to Major Kira by Dr. Bashir. A great Ferengi episode. I particularly like the A story in this, B story not so much. I love the fact that, you know, this was all a setup by Brunt. I love that scene when when you know, Dr. Bashir tells Quark that he doesn't have Dorak syndrome. He's like relaying the message, and then Quark's all happy, and he turns to Rom and says, "Do you know what this means?" And Rom's like, "You're gonna live," and he's like, "It means I get to sue Dr. Orpax for malpractice, and I get to live." Yeah, I loved this episode. I loved the scenes with when he enlists the help of Garrick to help kill him, and you know. Them going through the scenarios on the Hollow Suite was awesome. You know, him being scared and running around thinking that Garrick is going to kill him. I love that dream sequence where you see Rom as a Grand Nagus. You know, I love that
Grand Nagus Gint.
Yeah, I love
that. That was awesome.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, I love that makeup.
Or was it just foreshadowing?
Yeah. This, like I said, the A story was fantastic. I loved the Ferengi thing. The B story, but I understand the necessity. So for those who don't know, as we mentioned in our previous episode, Alexander Siddig and Nana Visitor, who played Dr. Bashir and Major Kira, respectively, actually became a couple in real life. And she actually got pregnant. So they needed a way to write her pregnancy into the show. So this is the, you know, kind of a neat science fiction twist on how to write in a pregnancy for a character. So Miles and Keiko are going to have a baby, but Kira's, you know, the surrogate, she's carrying the baby for them. But in real life, Nana Visitor is actually pregnant. So that's why they're doing this, which I thought was genius. And from a character standpoint, it does bring, you know, Kira closer with O'Brien in a way, you know, like, which was, you know, it later on in season five, it did lead to some comedy gold. But yeah, that's the reason why they did that, for Kira. But, overall, yeah, I love this episode. Let's see, Curtis, your thoughts, sir.
Well, I've sung Jeffrey Combs' praises enough. It's time for Armin Shimerman to get his time in the sun. I loved the job he did in this episode. It's such a kick out of Quark getting murdered by Garrick. Yep. Maybe I'm just twisted, but man, did he pull that off, and it was hilarious.
Yep.
Just love this episode. I agree that, it was a really cool twist to just transport the baby into Major Kira, which, I mean, maybe the simplest solutions are the best ones. It seems simple enough, then, you know, it wasn't complicated or anything. And it worked out so great for later seasons. There's so much fun that we can have.
Yep.
My favorite being, actually, when Kira's going to go on vacation at that cabin in the mountains on Bajor and Keiko insists that O'Brien goes with. Just, oh man, so cool. So yeah, good, great setup for later episodes. Super entertaining episode to watch. Hilarious. My sides burst every time.
Yep, agreed. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh yeah, this is a totally awesome episode. Tons of fun. Quark's high-pitched, girly scream is just so fantastic. And, I like the whole concept about, like, oh, I'm going to die, so I better sell off all my body parts. I thought that was awesome. People, you know, paying money to get a bit of Quark. I thought that was just a great concept. And then, you know, as far as the B plot goes, well, yeah, what can you do? The actress is pregnant, so you make the character pregnant, you know.
Yep.
They figured it out. It worked. So, yeah. This is a fun episode. Definitely would recommend.
And I just wanted to throw this in there. This is kind of like what Worf went through. Like, Quark is basically being shunned by Ferengi now for breaking a contract with another Ferengi. So basically, he's like dishonored in the eyes of Ferengi. So, you know, kind of very Worfish in what's going on with Quark at this moment.
Yeah, that's a good.
Yeah. Richard, your thoughts, sir.
I actually love this episode. Rom killed it. Two different characters. And, of course, like, the ever-supportive, loyal-as-heck brother. You know, he's more upset about it than Quark is. And Brunt just killing it again with his dastardly plots and schemes. And it totally screws over Quark. But fantastic episode. The, hold on, I'm just tired today, so I'm trying to think. The side plot, one more time, just so I don't get it wrong.
It's Miles and Keiko's unborn baby is transferred to Major Kira.
I had thoughts about that, too. I got lost on the brain, especially the now having a kid. But knowing now what I know about, like, how more so, like, I knew a fair bit about human physiology and stuff, but I know more now, having gone through it and been, like, a part of it. It's crazy that, like, he just transported the fetus from one person to another. Like, that level of medical just fascinates me because her body wasn't even prepared. Human females, their body goes through so many changes, and they're basically, they're literally designed to have children. And Kira's body wasn't at all at that point, but he did that on a freaking runabout. Like, how, like, it's basically a god level move. It's god tier right there. And that's just crazy.
Yeah. So,
killer episode. Loved it. And, you know, Kiriyoshi being part of the scene was super cool. And, yeah, fantastic episode. And that's pretty much it. And just pretty gangster that it was directed by Avery Brooks. Great episode. And he did a really good job on that.
He did, yep. All right, so we have arrived at the season finale. It is the 98th episode of the series, the 26th of the season, and it's Broken Link, stardate 49962.4, directed by Les Landau. Story by George A. Brozak, teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Original air date, June 17th, 1996. Odo collapses and is taken to the infirmary. Bashir discovers Odo is losing his ability to maintain solid form. All right, so for this episode, it was a good episode. You know, I love they're kind of building like Gowron, you know, is on this episode. In that he's making statements that, you know, they're going to take Arcanus from the Federation. So they kind of had that kind of going in the background. So if memory serves, and correct me if I'm wrong, so this would have been when Odo infected the Link with that virus from Section 31, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we didn't know that was happening at this time, but that's when it would have happened. A couple notes here. The decision to make him solid, I knew that wouldn't stick. Like, I just knew, like, he's gonna get back to being a changeling without a doubt. That's gonna happen. But interesting. I kind of wish they would have just. When they spit him out, he would have been just Rene Auberjonois. You know, instead of, like, looking like Odo, he would just look human. Like Rene Auberjonois. Like, I wish they kind of went that way. But I digress. I like the fact that Garrick and Worf, you know, get the fisticuffs in this episode when Garrick is going to use the Defiant to destroy the Founders and Worf catches them. And then they fight it out. That was cool. The fact that Garrick now has to spend a month in lockup, you know, unfortunately as a result of it, you know, it happens. And then, yeah, like the revelation at the end of the episode where Odo says that Gowron has been replaced with a changeling, and it's like, uh-oh, where do we go? What's going to happen now? It was a good little cliffhanger. It was a good little cliffhanger there. All right, Ragnar, your thoughts on this episode?
Well, this was a very interesting episode. I definitely understand where Garrick was coming from, and I still kind of can't help but wonder if Worf should have let him go through with it, because as we see in the later seasons, man, does the Dominion ever kill a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And if perhaps they had just blown up their home planet, which who knows if that would have worked, but if it did, imagine how many people would still be alive in the seasons that follow. But, yeah, it was very interesting. I found it hard to believe that the ability to shapeshift could just be taken away. I had some trouble with that. I mean, it was a cool punishment, but I don't know. I had trouble buying it as a concept. And yeah, I didn't really think it was going to stick. And actually, it stuck for a lot longer than I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a very good episode. Yeah, definitely sets up the next season real good.
Yep. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I thought it was a pretty good episode. And Ragnar's right. Like, I know that the Dominion and like the Founders are super powerful, but being changelings, I don't connect the point where they're able to take away the ability to shapeshift. Like, that's literally, again, God tier. Like, that's mm-hmm. how they were created. But who created them? They didn't create themselves.
Well, to be fair, they have genetically engineered at least two species that we know of, so.
I suppose, but it's still just, like, it's a huge disconnect for me, and, like, it was a cool concept and a hell of a punishment. Like, if I was a changeling, I sure as heck would not want to become solid either, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get it. But yeah, it was a good episode. I think there's more in part two that we'll talk about that I thought that was pretty clever. But yeah, good episode, and you know, it's going to be good to talk about that later when we go to the next episode.
Yeah. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Man, so many twists in this one. I love it. Well, as far as Garrick, I think that, like, I think it was Ragnar that was saying just now, his methodology, in my opinion, for dealing with the Dominion was absolutely sensible, because Garrick understood that the Dominion represent just this brute force. Like, they will go exactly as far as they need to and beyond to ensure their own security. And, I mean, that sort of, if you had someone breaking into your house intent on, let's say, murdering your family, the only way for you to deal with that is an extreme reaction of your own.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you have a freight train of, oh shit, coming straight at you, and you need to stop that thing. Or, like, it's really bad for everybody. So I can sympathize with Garrick's methodology.
Yep.
I did not see... this is one of the episodes that I remembered throughout my life after having watched it as a kid. And I reflected upon it often. The scene that really stuck with me, of course, was when they spat Odo back out of the Great Link and he was solid again. And I didn't see that coming at all. Just it totally blew me away, which was cool, because it's nice to get surprised that intensely
mm-hmm.
once in a while. And it sort of reminded me of the TNG episode where Troi lost her telepathic abilities for an episode, except Odo, of course, a little more in an episode about his abilities. So it was interesting to see how each character sort of, like, felt disabled having lost this ability that we as humans didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So to see them just be like perfectly healthy, capable, physically sound human beings, and they're complaining about it, was kind of funny to watch, you know?
Yeah, I was initially kind of disappointed. Like, I just felt that, you know, there's so much more they could have done with Odo as a changeling. So, you know, of course, later on when he gets his, spoilers, when he gets his abilities back, you know, they do. But at the time, like, I had no idea that, you know, he was going to get his powers back. So, at the time, I was kind of disappointed that they did that. Understandable, but at the same time, I was a little bummed. But
well, sure, it's fun to see like superhuman stuff happening.
Oh yeah, yep. All right. Well, that is an episode, gentlemen. We've reached the end of season 4.5. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet? And Curtis, where can we find you, sir?
I am still very much hiding and probably going to hide even more intensely in the future. So,
excellent.
But if I ever get my podcast going, you'll be the first to know.
Perfect. Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Instagram is Monkliffs, YouTube Monkliffs. Not much going on there. I don't really do a whole lot in that regard. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Excellent. And Ragnar, where can we find you, good sir?
Oh, I'm at RagnarTheTrader.com and also Ragnar the Trader on Facebook and Instagram. And I just thought we should probably have a little shout out here to Richard, who is now a dad.
Yep.
Sucker.
Right. Yeah. Right. Thank you. Also, if we're gonna do shout outs, Ragnar's got a July surprise bag out, y'all should take a look at. I might be picking one up here pretty soon, so check it out. I got the last month's Father's Day one. It was pretty dope.
Awesome.
Just saying.
Thanks, man. Excellent. Glad you liked it.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you can read my blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I am on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. We are going to be continuing, of course, with the Deep Space Nine discussion. Next episode will be for season 5.0, the first 13 episodes of season 5. The next other episode of the Pop Culture Pub podcast, I believe, is Podcast Time Machine, and we are going to be talking about Saturday morning cartoons and cereal. So the cartoons we used to watch as kids on Saturday mornings and the cereals we used to eat.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Used to. I still eat those cereals. I got Cinnamon Toast Crunch in a cupboard right now, dude.
Oh, I hear you. as do I. I've got Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I've got Lucky Charms. What else do we got? I think we got Honey Nut Cheerios as well. But
I've got peanut butter and chocolate Cheerios, dude.
Nice.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Saturday morning cartoons just don't exist like they used to. So that's one of the things
you're
going to be reminiscing about. But that will be coming in the not too distant future.
I can't wait.
All right. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Curtis Holloway, and Ragnar the Trader, and Richard Szabo, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Deep Space Nine Season 4.5 discussion, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.